content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 10 years. Thank you, Carter Glass. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to the December 2020 issue of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. This, of course, would be the holiday theme issue. And in fitting with the holidays, the title of our first article is 12 Days of Davidson. For more than three decades, the small college town north of Charlotte has been known for its Hallmark-like holiday festival featuring costumed pooches, gingerbread houses, and Christmas trees galore. This year, the town will revise its celebration. I wonder why. Written by Laurie K. Tate, at Christmas in Davidson, Lovey, a black cocker spaniel dressed in an elf-on-the-shelf costume, takes her job seriously. When folks walk up to her gingerbread house to ask where to find Santa or s'mores, Lovey's cuteness quickly distracts them into a petting frenzy. She doesn't mind, but if you're another dog, you'd better back off, because this is her gig. After Lovey's welcome, her human, Julie Jones, who has worked the event's gingerbread house information booth for 15 years, steps in to direct guests to the various bastions of holiday cheer. Think Victorian carolers, horse-drawn carriages, and a live nativity, complete with an alpaca and a llama. For the past 32 holiday seasons, this three-day festival has taken place during the first weekend of December in the cozy cottage town a little more than 20 miles north of Charlotte. But this year, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Christmas in Davidson will take on a different shape and size. Organizers have reimagined the huge holiday tradition as something smaller and safer. Instead of preparing for big crowds that require trolley transport from satellite parking lots, the town is stretching its holiday cheer into a new format. No worries, though. Davidson's tall Norway spruce will still be lit on December 1st, and the streets will still be decorated like a Hallmark Christmas movie, with glowing luminaries and piped-in Christmas music. But the traditional three-day event will run much longer this year. From December 1st through December 12th, the old Christmas in Davidson will become the 12 Days of Christmas in Davidson. Rather than staged performances, there will be a drive-in Christmas movie and roving entertainment, including a man dressed as a nutcracker on stilts. Social distancing vertically. And Steve Langley, the bubble man, blowing soapy snowflake-shaped bubbles. As for the 50 vendor booths that normally take up residence on the village green, they will be replaced with social media contests. We want our support. We want to support our local businesses in a safe way, says Kim Fleming, who, as economic development manager for Davidson, usually begins planning the holiday event in July. Fleming says that social distancing and face masks will be required for the event this season. Yet, aside from the masks, she says, this is more of a return to how Christmas in Davidson started. The original Christmas in Davidson was the brainchild of the late Irene Blackwell, who owned the village store on Main Street with her late husband, Taylor. Back in 1988, Irene thought it would be a good idea for the town's stores to stay open later for a few nights during the holidays so folks could finish their shopping. Little did anyone know that this modest last-minute shopping spree would grow into a festival that, by last year, attracted 30,000 attendees and more than 1,000 volunteers. Over the years, the town has kept the traditional elements that people love about the event. For instance, children could always count on visits with Santa at Davidson College Presbyterian Church, as well as story time and cookies with Mrs. Claus at a local real estate office. Couples could enjoy a romantic evening with a horse-drawn carriage ride and shopping at the village store, now owned by Irene's son, Greg, and his wife, Megan. As the event grew, so did its offerings. A couple of Christmases ago, a snow globe big enough for kids to frolic in was added, along with a carousel and a selfie booth housed in a decked-out vintage Volkswagen bus. Businesses, churches, local artisans, schools, and nonprofits have all had a hand in the evolution of the beloved Davidson event, and in 2020 it will evolve once again. So, no, the food court that normally sets up in the lot beside Summit Coffee won't be there this year, which means that Marcus Rivens won't be grilling turkey legs for Davidson Presbyterian Church. The church has been setting up a white tent in the corner of the food court since anyone can remember, and its turkey legs, chicken wings, and sausage dogs are legendary. The church sold out of turkey legs on the first night of Christmas in Davidson last year. Also missing this year will be the s'mores and the lessons that Davidson's Cub Scout Pack 58 always offered on the art of roasting marshmallows. But there are some old-fashioned holiday traditions like homemade decorations hanging from the limbs of freshly cut trees that the coronavirus won't be taking away from Davidson this year. While many folks watch football games on the Saturday after Thanksgiving, members of the Rotary Club of Davidson get busy putting out Fraser firs from the North Carolina mountains to create Christmas in Davidson's Giving Tree Village. Local business sponsors each tree, while nonprofits partner with those businesses to decorate the trees in fun themes. In the past, attendees voted on their favorites by paying for a ticket to put in a bucket next to the tree of their choice. This year, during the first 12 days of Christmas, or rather of December, folks will be able to vote by scanning a QR code. The Rotary Club launched Giving Tree Village in 2013 with 15 trees. Last year, the club raised more than $30,000 for charity and had 62 trees, including one that was decorated like a huge monarch butterfly, for Davidson Lands Conservancy, and another that was laden with little pink houses promoting Build for the Cure, a fundraiser for Susan G. Komen Charlotte. It's that kind of creativity, imagination, and dedication that grace the branches of each tree every year. And that won't change this year. People don't mind taking the time to make these trees special because they know how much they mean to the community. And this season, as the world reels from a year like no other, Giving Tree Village should bring even more joy. That same commitment to holiday happiness will be apparent in other events during this year's 12 Days of Christmas in Davidson, like the Ugly Christmas Sweater Contest. With a $100 cash prize, a trophy, and most important, bragging rights, this competition brings out some of the tackiest togs you could imagine. Contestants are mostly kids and teens, and the lineup always includes Helga Mintz and her granddaughter, Lexia Giannopoulos, both from nearby Mooresville. Pinned to Lexia's red cardigan last year were little ugly sweaters that she'd collected from wine bottles over the years. "We do it just to be goofy," says Helga, who opted for a Grinch motif with a fur-trimmed chartreuse wrap featuring a depiction of Whoville topped off with flashing lights. "We'd been wanting to do the Grinch for a while." Despite their efforts, first place went to Davidson sixth grader Finn Steen, who embraced an irony theme by not wearing a Christmas sweater at all. This year, the contest will still be held on the Village Green, but the audience will watch via Facebook Live. Regardless, you can bet that Helga and Lexia will come up with another innovative way to model their Christmas spirit. After all, they have a reputation to maintain, COVID or not. Sadly, Lovey, the Cocker Spaniel that's usually stationed at the gingerbread house, won't be working her post this December, but she'll likely be tuned in on Facebook Live for her favorite attraction at Christmas in Davidson, the Doggy Fashion Show. The furry fashionistas will strut their stuff on the Village Green, where local dance schools, bands, and choruses would normally perform holiday numbers. Hosted by local veterinarian Dick Hay, the Doggy Fashion Show began 30 years ago and had something of a cult following. Standing tall in his red fleece vest and Santa hat, Hay received the applause normally reserved for a rock star as he took the stage last year. He proceeded to tell corny dog jokes that only a vet could get away with. What do you get when you cross a cocker spaniel with a rooster? A cock-a-poodle-doo! For her car part, Lovey thinks that Hay is a riot, and she's confident that she would bring down the house if she ever participated. Most of the dogs wore cute Christmas sweaters last year, but occasionally an owner thought outside the gift box. One rescue dog was dressed like a Salvation Army volunteer. There were no winners in the show, as all of the participating dogs received treat bags, and the same will be true this year. We wanted to honor parts of the festival's history, the Doggy Fashion Show, while providing an event that adheres to all health and safety protocols, says Economic Development Manager Fleming. It's nice to have a little familiarity in a year full of so much that's different. With all of the cancellations in 2020, many people assumed that Christmas in Davidson wouldn't happen this year. But just as the citizens of Whoville made the best of Christmas morning without all of the trimmings, the town of Davidson has fashioned a safe and festive way to celebrate the season they hold dear. As for Lovey, she's excited to have a year off so she can finally enjoy watching the festivities from the comfort of her home. The 12 days of Christmas in Davidson is over by the time you listen to this. It ran from the 1st to the 12th. Roving entertainment was held daily, and the rest of it really doesn't matter, does it, since it is over. You are listening to Our State Magazine on the North Carolina Reading Service. Comments, questions, call the studios 919-832-5138. I almost said something as I started this article because there were several references to the Hallmark Channel. Now, for those of you who listen to audio-described television shows, a lot of you have been frustrated that the Hallmark Channel offers zippo, none, zero audio description. Well, it turns out that starting July of 2021, there's about a 95 to 100% guarantee that they are going to be required by law to begin requiring audio description. So next year, next holiday season, you should hear some of your favorite holiday movies and some new ones audio described on the Hallmark Channel, assuming that you get the Hallmark Channel on however you get your television. So we'll have more on that when the FCC finalizes their ruling, probably around the March timeframe of next year. And now we are going to move on to another article. This one is entitled An Enduring Tradition. The handmade Hanukkah market may be quiet this year, but the close-knit community of artisans at Temple Beth Orr in Raleigh will not let a pandemic keep them down. Families will still be celebrating together in their homes, remembering markets past, and hand-making goodies for the future. Here's a young man holding up a set of handmade coasters under his business name, Griffin Woodworks. And here is a Hanukkah candle That would, well, it's made like a Hanukkah candle out of Legos. It really, of course, isn't lightable or the whole thing will melt down, but it has the requisite 9 candle pieces at the top, or 8 plus the lighter in the center. And this particular one is made of blue and white with red and green and white bases to the blue candle holders. On a Sunday morning last December, the fellowship hall at Raleigh's Temple Beth Or was abuzz with families clustered around tables loaded with festive items for sale. For 6 years, the temple's handmade Hanukkah market had been a popular event, especially designed to showcase the talents of local Jewish artists, crafters, and cooks. Early on, a long line meandered through the room, ending at the Sweet Boy Bakery booth, where two teenage boys exchanged loaves of bread and bags of sweets for cash, while a third young man dug around in cardboard boxes under the table, trying to restock as quickly as he could. The sweet boys soon sold out of their challah bread and babka, and their supply of rugelach, another Hanukkah favorite, hope I pronounced that properly, because it was dwindling. While the rush slowed down, the young entrepreneurs, two brothers and a close friend, huddled momentarily and then high-fived before calling home to see if someone might be able to bring more homemade jellies and jams, delicate French macarons, and the trio's clever paint-your-own cookie kits, which include a little brush and a tablet of water-soluble icing. Normally, their mother, baker Sharon Schwinger, would have been with them, but she had another event across town that day. "Our mom is the mastermind for our business," eldest son Harrison says. "We're just the behind-the-counter guys." Sharon says that even when her boys were young, they helped out with sales at the booth. But now Harrison Lucas, along with their brother Grayson, have learned to bake on their own. All three have won North Carolina State Fair ribbons for their creations, and there's a good reason for that. Their mother teaches food and nutrition at Leesville Road High School. "I wasn't going to be the mother-in-law who didn't teach her sons how to do anything," Sharon says. The boy's good friend Joel Messicar was also recruited to the family kitchen. He aspires to be a food critic, and he often makes suggestions and performs taste tests when the group is working on a new recipe. At the handmade Hanukkah market in 2019, Joel subbed for Grayson. All four boys are members of the Temple Beth Or, a close-knit group of families dating back to 1912. Tucked into a forest of tall pines and deciduous trees off of Creedmoor Road, Temple Beth Or is a sprawling building with banks of ascending windows and steeply sloped roof lines. The modernist architecture gives the impression of many tents pitched together, reaching for the heavens. Some 500 families belong to this vibrant congregation that's led by Rabbis Lucy H.F. Dinner and Leah Citron. TBO, as its members fondly refer to the synagogue, has been nurturing generations of members for more than a century. By tradition, most of the market vendors are family teams from the congregation who aim to come up with offerings not likely found at other holiday shopping venues. Beyond the Sweet Boys booth at last year's market, Felice Bogus, a 2-time World Food Championships competitor, had set up with her husband, Bob Mermelstein, and their daughter, Margalit, and a senior at Cary Academy. They were selling their new line of handcrafted dog biscuits called Rough Stuff Treats. "The funny thing is that I'm usually competing with my desserts and breads for people, not pets," Felice says, laughing. Her peanut butter bones, the family's most popular product, are made in small batches with grains collected from local breweries that discard them after making beer. By noon, when the synagogue's men's group, the TBO Brotherhood, started selling deli sandwiches off to one side, two new vendors had begun to draw a clamor. Customers were forced to form lines to get a closer look at 8-year-old Noah Glukowski's Lego menorahs, stylized in colorful patterns. Noah sat beside his baby sister and seemed dazed by the compliments he was getting. Fortunately, his gentle parents were there to field questions. Next to the Lego menorah table, 11-year-old Griffin Birchall, his older siblings Adam and Maya, and their parents Chris and Lee were dressed in matching red T-shirts bearing the Griffin Woodworks logo, a mythical griffin. The impish Griffin, all smiles, was hawking his cutting boards and coasters made from recycled woods that he cuts and planes with high-tech tools at the Maker's Space in Raleigh. Back in his home workshop, he then sands, glues, and oils each piece to a lovely luster. The 2019 market was Griffin's first event, and he reportedly earned the most in total sales that day. Also a member of the robotics team at Ligon Magnet Middle School, Griffin says that he's considering a career in designing surgical robots. TBO is a special place, his mother says. The family vibe that you see at the market is present in everything we do at Temple. I'm so grateful for this community. A highlight of Hanukkah is the ritual lighting of menorah candles, one each day to commemorate the week that Judah Maccabee and his followers reclaimed the sacred temple in Jerusalem in the 2nd century B.C. As the insurgents rebuilt the altar and relit the ancient menorah, they discovered only enough purified oil to burn the lights for a single night. Yet somehow the flames, which represented the creation of earth in 7 days, as well as enlightenment, never sputtered out over 8 days when more purified oil was at last available. This miracle of light is celebrated by Jews around the world during 8 days in December. This year, however, Temple Beth Or's candle lighting ceremonies will be conducted in individual homes. Because of COVID-19 precautions, the synagogue has canceled both the Hanukkah market and its one-night gathering of families who would normally assemble at the fellowship hall at dark. By tradition, each family would come forward to stand on the stage at the front of the hall with their own menorahs brought from home. Together, they would light the candles. And amid the sacred blaze of flames and the sweet swirling scent of melting wax, the celebrants would claim the Hanukkah miracle, reciting blessings and giving thanks for their faith. Market founder Robin Riley is disappointed to miss this year's celebrations, but the temple's ability to pivot to new ways of celebrating only serves to reinforce the durability of its faith and its compassion. We decided to cancel the handmade market to make sure that everyone, both artists and community members, stay safe and healthy, she says. Hanukkah to me is a celebration of family, food, friends, and tradition. It thrills me that we've been able to attract these inventive young artists and their families, and we'll be looking at dates for next year very soon. As for the Sweet Boys, the pandemic challenge of online classes at home has meant there's been less time to spend on baking. Their mother, Sharon, says that the social isolation has been tough on the boys. They particularly miss their friends from TBO Sunday School, she says, though their adopted brother, Joel, has come over often for sleepovers during the shutdown. After all, he's practically family. In the golden light of mid-December, when the schoolwork finally slows down and the boys have more time to spend together, they will inevitably gather in the kitchen again, Sharon says. At the very least, they'll make their treats for family and friends a quiet demonstration of the resilience and warmth that still define Hanukkah. Temple Beth Or is at 5315 Creedmoor Road. And now, in the few minutes that we have left, I'm going to read a little bit from the heart of Clay Country, and we'll get to the rest of it next time. An afternoon in a tank of gas, it's called. The town of Seagrove and its surrounding hamlets occupy only a few square miles in the corners of Randolph and Moore counties, yet they're home to dozens of potters, one of the densest concentrations in the world. To paraphrase an old saw, you can't throw a pot without hitting one. Written by Sherry Kessel. Going to Seagrove is a trip, but going to look for Seagrove pottery is a quest. Finding the perfect piece of iconic North Carolina pottery requires and promises far more than one-stop shopping. To visit Seagrove properly is to explore miles of scenic two-lane blacktops and a fair number of gravel driveways, each a tempting path to one of nearly 100 workshops and galleries. Seasoned pilgrims know to bring a good map and a feasible itinerary, plus a willingness to detour and follow a hunch that something extraordinary is just around the corner. Seagrove Potters built this community of studios and shops from the ground up, literally. The area was naturally rich in red clay that punished farmers and rewarded potters, who turned it into a simple series of serviceable pieces like jugs and churns to use in their homes and sell for a little cash. As customers' needs and tastes evolved, and with encouragement from affluent art collectors, the modern era of Seagrove pottery began in 1917. The turners and burners shifted to more artistic and profitable pieces that would garner worldwide acclaim. Collectors with knowing eyes can quickly spot Seagrove pieces, both vintage and contemporary, recognizing shapes and glazes found nowhere else. Seagrove is the geographic center of the state, but for many people, it's the center of the pottery universe. It's hard to imagine a more fascinating or fruitful place to find holiday gifts, including the ones we'll wind up keeping for ourselves. Beyond the tens of thousands of pieces of pottery, shoppers can find all sorts of things to buy, see, do, eat, and learn, no matter if it's their first foray or an annual trip. Every visitor can enjoy the ride, even if all they do is window shop. Those Seagrove gifts might go home with someone else, but the Seagrove experience belongs to the beholders. The first place we'll mention, and it may be the only one we'll have time to cover, I don't know, is Luck's Ware. Sid Luck is a fifth-generation potter who still digs local clay for some of his pieces, which are shaped on a wheel from his dad's shop and fired in a traditional wood-burning groundhog kiln. He throws classic and salt-glazed stoneware, the latter made by flinging handfuls of ordinary salt into the kiln near the end of firing. When it melts, it forms an orange peel texture in the glaze. Most days, customers can find Luck working away in his shop. As he shapes pots on the wheel, Luck chats with customers, ensuring that each shopping expedition is also a lesson in local pottery traditions from an expert named a North Carolina living treasure. Classic two-handled and multi-handled cork jugs, nicknamed drunkard jugs, and old bowls that Luck calls gravy boats, although no one would dare put gravy in these collectible works of art, are his favorite pieces to make. He's at 1604 Adams Road in Seagrove, luxware.com. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine, and next time we'll try to get to more of these places at Seagrove. I hope you enjoyed it, and you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this magazine program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Questions, comments, call the studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.